Chapter 4.
The Fire. Peter had no idea how hot it was outside until he went to the shed that evening to find the camping equipment. All day long, the air conditioning had been running inside the house, keeping it at a delightful 23 degrees. Outside, though, the humidity was oppressive and the heat intense. Big thunderclouds gathered on the horizon. How Peter hoped a cool change was in store for the weekend. There were plenty of old things stacked away in the shed. Bikes and tennis rackets, soccer shoes and basketballs. Why, he wondered, hasn't this stuff been cleared out long ago in a giant garage sale? It sure needs to be done. Neatly stored away on a high shelf was all the camping equipment. As a family, they'd once gone on plenty of trips abroad. They'd travelled together right across Canada and even down into the United States. Peter knew he'd had a wonderful childhood, growing up in a happy Christian family. His parents had instilled in every one of their three sons a strong sense of honesty and a good measure of kindness. Andrew, the oldest brother, was a glowing tribute to his mum and dad. They were so happy he had become a pastor. Andrew was energetic, personable, and a strong leader. He had a very supportive wife and five wonderful kids. When Peter's parents spoke of their eldest son, it was always with a great deal of respect and praise. In fact, there were only two complaints Peter had ever heard uttered against Andrew. One was that he didn't live right next door, and the other was that he was very difficult to get in touch with. An answering machine usually took his calls, and Andrew only responded when he found the time, which was often a week or two later. Since Peter's parents were too nervous to fly out to Stirling, Nova Scotia, and it took at least 24 hours to drive all that way, they didn't see their sons or their grandchildren nearly as often as they wanted to. It was easy enough to find the old blue cooler, as it was sitting right on the top shelf, but Peter had to dig through dusty air mattresses and giant orange tarps in his search for the lantern. It didn't look as though his parents had done any camping on their own for quite some time. Finally, he found the lantern lying underneath the tarps on a heavy blue tent. James' special flashlight was right beside it, tucked in the musty canvas folds. With a smile, Peter picked it up. At one time, that flashlight had been James' favourite possession. He'd even taken it to school to show off to his friends. Now it just looked old and bulky and ready for the dump. James certainly wouldn't want it any more. As a bachelor in a downtown condominium working for a large accounting firm, James always had the latest and greatest toys. Nonetheless, Peter laid the flashlight down gently. He missed James a lot. They'd been great friends growing up, and even now, James probably understood him better than anyone else in the family. They were both still single, and had often consoled one another when various relationships with girls hadn't worked out. James was a friendly, laid-back individual who considered himself to be a good Christian, and wasn't concerned whether or not anyone else did. While he hardly ever went to church, he gave plenty to charity, and was fully involved in a hockey club for underprivileged boys. Seeing that both the cooler and the lantern needed to be cleaned, Peter carried them inside to the laundry room. His mum showed him where the detergents were kept and passed him a rag. "Have you finished the book?" she asked casually. "I have." "And what did you think of it?" Peter turned on the hot water and let it run into a pail. "I'm not sure," he replied honestly. "I spent most of last night trying to figure that out." "You should mention it to Andrew when you see him. I know he'd love to talk to you about it." "Yeah, I guess I should. I probably will." "Feel free to help yourself to the rest of the series," she encouraged with a smile as she left the room. Peter didn't answer right away. He finished scrubbing the cooler and started on the lantern. But when his mother came by again, he called out, "Maybe you could throw a couple of those books in my bag?" "Okay, dear." A minute later, as Peter was trying to clean the glass on the lantern, it slipped out of his hands and smashed onto the floor. With a moan, Peter bent over to pick up the biggest pieces of glass. He wondered what he should do. Without the glass protection, the lantern was useless. It would be possible to get by without one, but so much nicer to have a bright light in the evenings. Since Thomas was already providing most of the gear and cooking equipment, Peter wanted to do his part. His mum came to see what had broken. "I guess I'll have to run out and pick up another lantern," Peter said, sweeping up the tiny slivers of glass that remained on the floor. Granville was only a small town, and Peter doubted that any of the stores nearby would have camping gear for sale. "Will the stores still be open in Amber Hill?" he asked. "Yes, Canadian Tire is open till 9, his mother replied. "You'll find everything you need there." Then she paused anxiously. "Are you sure you'll be okay? You won't drive on the wrong side of the road, or anything like that." Peter laughed and gave his mum a squeeze. "I'll just have to hope someone honks good and loud if I do." As Peter headed down towards Amber Hill in his parents' old blue Mazda, He had to remind himself only once to stay on the right side of the road. Since it was so hot, he kept the air conditioning on full blast and the radio blaring above that. Enormous thunderclouds were billowing towards him, blackening the distant horizon. It looked like a bad storm was on the way. A song came on the radio that Peter loved, and he turned the volume up even higher. The heavy beat reverberated badly in the Mazda's poor quality speakers. It was nothing like the pristine sound he enjoyed in his shiny black Australian roadster, but at the moment Peter didn't care. The wild, crazy song he was listening to echoed every bit of the hurt and bitterness that he still felt inside. Knowing the words off by heart, Peter sang along as loudly as he could. "This pain, it's killing me, over and over. How I long to be set free. Let me out. Let me fly away. Your love meant the world to me. I need you. I need you. Now you're gone. I've lost the key." In the last few months, ever since the song had been released, Peter had listened to it numerous times, feeling perfect empathy with the lead singer. Singing along as he was now provided great relief for the moment, but the good feeling never lasted for long. When the song was over, Peter always felt sadder than he had before. Suddenly the music was interrupted by an emergency weather report. Peter listened with alarm. Tornadoes had been spotted south of Amber Hill, and severe thunderstorms threatened the entire area. 15 minutes later, when Peter pulled into the parking lot of Canadian Tire, the whole sky was an eerie greenish colour, and the wind had become a gale force. Just walking the short distance into the store took considerable effort. Peter looked up anxiously at the dark, churning clouds rushing by. Would there be another tornado? It had been a long time since he'd experienced the extreme weather conditions that frequent southern Ontario. There were quite a few different lanterns for sale inside the store, and Peter wasn't in any hurry. It suddenly occurred to him that a lantern and a double air mattress would make a great wedding present. Thomas and Purity were planning to go camping for their 2-week honeymoon. Peter hoped that if he lingered long enough, the storm might blow over. Examining every lantern carefully, he read all the information on the various boxes and managed to extend his shopping venture for almost an hour. Other customers talked nervously about what was happening outside, and several times the lights flickered on and off. Frequent weather reports over the loud speakers confirmed that the storm was causing much damage in other areas. After making some of the best-informed purchases of his life, Peter left the store with two lanterns and a mattress. He had to run through a barrage of hail to get to his parents' car. So much for hoping the storm might pass over, it was raging full force with powerful winds and terrifying thunder and lightning. The temperature had dropped considerably, and there was no longer any need for the air conditioner. Starting the Mazda and glancing ahead, Peter noticed that the traffic lights were out at the main intersection, and cars were lined up in every direction. He decided it would take far too long to return home the way he'd come, so he chose an alternate route, hoping there wasn't a power outage right across town. As he headed towards the business section of Amber Hill, a brilliant fork of lightning illuminated the greenish-black sky. Tremendous, resonating booms burst forth almost immediately. The storm was extremely close and violent, and Peter wondered where the next strike would be. Thankfully, the power was still on in the centre of town, and Peter was glad he'd chosen to come that way. Stopping for a red light, he watched the hail that was bouncing off his windshield in amazement. Trees were thrashing wildly back and forth on either side of the road. Just across from the intersection, though, light poured radiantly from the stained glass windows of a century-old church. There were several cars in the parking lot. How nice to be safely inside, Peter thought. He could hardly wait to get home. Two vehicles on the other side of the intersection began to creep forward, and Peter realized the light had turned green. But before he could step on the accelerator, a bolt of lightning split the sky and came in direct contact with a tall pine near the old church. A ball of fire lit up the stormy night. Peter could hardly believe his eyes. The tree was instantly ablaze, and to his horror, flames were reaching out to the church roof. Was this some kind of a crazy nightmare? The two other cars were now far away. The fire was all too terribly real, and Peter worried about the people inside the church. Someone had to warn them before it was too late, and at that moment, he was the only witness. Quickly parking the Mazda, Peter dashed through the hail and wind. Pounding several times on the heavy front doors, he soon came to the conclusion that with the noise of the storm, his loud thumps weren't audible inside. Since the doors weren't locked, Peter rushed into the foyer. Another set of doors closed off the main assembly room. He knocked loudly again. He could hear an orchestra and people singing inside, so he assumed someone should be able to hear him. Again he pounded on the door, but still there was no response. Fear took hold on his heart. How much time did he have? Politeness and respect would have to be set aside. The lives of everyone inside the building were in peril, and he had to let them know, now. Just as he was about to barge in, An older woman opened the door with great annoyance and whispered harshly, "We're right in the middle of a rehearsal. Whatever do you want?" A large group of girls were singing merrily on the front stage, hardly daring to take their eyes off the conductor. The young ladies in the orchestra were making beautiful music, but Peter knew he had to interrupt. "I'm sorry for disturbing everyone," he called out apologetically, "but your roof is on fire." The older lady looked suspiciously at Peter, as though she wondered if he was completely sane. "I hope this isn't some kind of a prank," she muttered, walking quickly outside. However, she rushed back in without delay, crying wildly, "Out! Out! Everyone out at once! The roof is on fire!" Immediately, the music came to a dead stop, and panic set in. The older woman rushed off to call the fire department, and Peter found himself helping to manage the crowd. There were frantic youngsters and terrified teens. Some of the girls were trying to drag out huge musical instruments, while others ran around in circles, unsure of what to do first. Too many girls were trying to press through the doorway at once. Things became even worse when the lights went out and the church was plunged into absolute darkness. Then smoke began to fill the room. Between the relatively calm directions of the conductor and Peter's physical assistants, the large group of girls and musical instruments were eventually moved out of harm's way. It was a slow process, and yet still the fire department hadn't arrived. Standing outside in the tempest, everyone stared up at the furious flames that leaped and danced upon the roof. Loud cracks and groans from the old wooden beams indicated they were about to give way. Peter was feeling greatly relieved that everyone's safe. That was all that truly mattered, until he heard an agonized wail from the conductor. "But I thought she was with you!" Looking over, Peter saw the calm conductor suddenly become hysterical. "Where is she? Amanda! Amanda!" she cried out in terror. "Please, God, don't let her be inside!" There was a deafening crack of timber as a small section of the burning roof collapsed. Panic rippled through the group as they all began calling for Amanda. It was soon obvious that the youngest member of the choir wasn't outside with the rest, and then everyone turned to Peter for help. "Please, sir, she's only 4 years old," the conductor begged. "Please, won't you try to find her? Maybe she's too scared to come out. We think she's still in there by the stage." Peter could hardly believe it. They were pleading with him in full expectation that he'd attempt such a daring rescue. Even the older woman, who had been so annoyed when he knocked on the door, was now begging him to go back in. Gazing quickly up at the burning roof and the flames flaring up behind the windows, Peter knew there wasn't time to argue. It might already be too late. The fire department was nowhere inside. Going against every natural instinct, Peter dashed back into the church. Every second counted, but where should he look first? By the stage? Flames were taking hold of the center aisle, devouring the carpet and the ancient wooden pews. A thick, choking smoke was filling the room, and Peter remembered to drop to his knees. "What if I get trapped in here?" he thought. "What if one of those timbers falls on top of me? What if this is the end of my life?" Peter tried to banish the paralyzing thoughts from his mind. The life of a helpless child now depended on him. Hurriedly, he crawled up the side aisle to the front, calling out the little girl's name. But no one responded. It was almost impossible to see. The smoke blurred his eyesight, and the roof was creaking and groaning ominously. Another flaming timber fell in from the overhead blaze. Peter was desperate to get out before he was trapped, but he also hated to give up. How horrible it would be to come out without the little girl and feel that he hadn't tried hard enough. How terrible for anyone to perish when they could be saved. But where was she? "God, help me," he implored spontaneously. "Please help me find the little girl." Peter hadn't spoken to God in years, but who else was there to call upon? "Please, God, please," he begged. Seconds ticked by, long, unsuccessful, anxious seconds, as he searched all over the stage, and then Peter considered that if two people died in the fire, it would be an even worse tragedy. The heat was becoming intense, and he was beginning to suffocate. He wasn't ready to give up his life. This was insanity. He had to get out. Groping his way back to the foyer, Peter thought only about finding clean, fresh air. Then he bumped against something. It was a leg. Amanda was lying right in front of him, unconscious, on the floor. Picking the little girl up in his arms and holding his breath, Peter stood up and made a run for the front doors. Hands reached out to take the limp body of the child from him, and with great relief, Peter collapsed onto the wet grass. Breathing deeply, he was very thankful to be alive. The fire department arrived a minute later with an ambulance right behind. Finally, trained men with full equipment could take charge, and take charge they did. As the firemen rushed to hose down the church, the paramedics took care of Peter and the little girl. Amanda was quickly hurried away in the ambulance, with the conductor right beside her, while Peter was given oxygen. Now that the wind and the hail had blown past, there was only a steady rain. Many of the girls crowded around Peter on the lawn, earnestly inquiring if he'd be okay and thanking him profusely for his courage. "You're the bravest man in the world," one of them cried out. "We knew you could do it," said another. "You're a hero tonight," the paramedic smiled as he examined Peter thoroughly and administered oxygen. "That little girl owes her life to you." Peter smiled back, even though the praise was making him feel uncomfortable. Never before had he come so close to death. Now that it was all over, he was getting the shakes. He felt incredibly emotional, and he just wanted to return home as soon as he could. When the paramedic was convinced that Peter hadn't suffered any serious physical harm and that he was breathing normally once more, Peter thought he was now free to leave. But before he could go anywhere, a van pulled up and a news crew spilled out. Oh no, Peter thought. Who called these guys? There was no chance of slipping away. Two violinists were eagerly pulling him forward. "Here he is," they announced. "He's the one who saved Amanda." Without giving him any choice in the matter, the news reporter began interviewing Peter live. Peter tried to downplay the heroism that the reporter was trying to build. He felt that pressure from the crowd had forced him to rescue the little girl, not any great bravery or selflessness on his part. But above all, what was most disconcerting to Peter at that moment was a quiet, piercing thought that perhaps God had answered his cry for help. The trauma he had just been through provoked such a mixed array of emotions that Peter found it difficult to answer the questions the reporter was asking. He was most thankful when the camera crew finally turned their attention to the fire chief, and he was free at last to make an exit.